Hi, Nate.
Hey, Tom.
Do you want some advice from Wolf?
Not really.
Well, I'm going to give it to our listeners then. Advice from a wolf. Trust your instincts. Be at home in nature. Keep your den clean. Stand for what you believe. Stay on track. Howl with your friends. Be a leader. And pack life with good memories.
That seems like pretty good advice.
Pretty generic. I actually don't think it's wolf specific. Yeah, I think that it's generally.
Okay. Bring people advice. Is this a joke about that we're going to talk about llamas and the wolf counters the llama?
Yeah, we got some mammalian energy.
Mammalian energy. I know my tree is well enough today.
To know like where they are on the animal kingdom scale. I should look that up.
Yeah, so I mean, most people would have guessed this. Any AI podcast these 2 weeks is going to talk about llama. I think we're not going to really cover too many details about whatever the heck models' numbers are. Numbers are good. Last time the chat models got a lot of blowback. Not really getting that this time. Most people are saying that they like kind of over delivered in ways. I think I feel like they over delivered. I was kind of expecting them before to only be able to under deliver with how much competition there was. But the scale of investment from Llama, the step up from Llama 2 to Llama 3 is clear. Like it's like seems like maybe like 10x the investment / effort / compute. It's clear if you look at the numbers and how much training data they've put through the models, which is proportional to GPUs, which are expensive. They have this huge model looming. We'll kind of have to go through these things in order. I think it's the one we should start with what is here now. So they release these like a smaller model, 8 billion parameters, a bigger model, 70 billion parameters, both trained on a ton of data. We could talk about the joke of small, large language models and all these awful namings, but like those models are here. They're above GPT. The biggest model is the impactful one, really. In the narrative, it's better than GPT 3.5, not as good as Claude 3 Opus, not quite as good as GPT 4 currently, not quite as good as Google's best model currently, but it is close. It's like, by all evaluations and metrics, it's in the right ballpark. And the weights are out there, which is just, it's a moment that people have been talking about, and it kind of came and went without any disasters or anything.
Okay.
And they have this model looming, so I'm struck by that it's just so much more. I expected them to kind of be a dud. And they kept delaying, and now it's here, and they kind of over delivered. And like, it seems like Mark Zuckerberg is heavily invested and involved, and this giant company is starting to another giant company is throwing their weight around in this arena in a very different way than the other one. So there's so many directions that we can kind of take this. I think, what is your first reaction?
It's interesting. We were kind of chatting about this before we started recording about Zuckerberg's maybe impressive degree of involvement in the weeds of this release and what's behind it. I think a conversation I'm interested in is, what does it mean to, if you're at one of these companies, be a leader? And if you think about, you know, what sets Zuckerberg apart from Sundar, apart from Sam Altman, apart from, excuse me for forgetting the name of the NVIDIA CEO, we gave a hard time. Yeah. But we're kind of in this, I think it's a part of the hype cycle that these personalities have this kind of like, there's like a renaissance of like these people again. But their leadership styles seem palpably different to me, even as somebody who's not really following this super closely. So I would be interested to explore that.
They are. I think Sam Altman, Jensen Huang, Mark Zuckerberg are all seen as extremely successful in a forward-facing way. I mean, Sundar Pichai has obviously been extremely successful at Google, but he's not on the front foot with AI like the others are. Mark Zuckerberg is like this like, fun, he's trying to be like personable and grounded and like talking through these things. It's so funny when major tech CEOs go on podcasts. It's like what vibe they present. So he's like trying to be a chill person. And they're like, yeah, on the interview with Dorakesh Patel, he was asked like about when he was they offered to buy Facebook for $1 million. And he was like, oh, well, what if I was going to say yes to this, all I was going to do is want to build it anyways. So it's like this like builder attitude and just trying to, and I think he comes across as sincere. I think that it's just like, it shows how important it is to Meta. I think for some technological history, like not to get into all the details, Meta has a lot of deep set trauma from its relationships with Apple, where like there's another line in the interview. This interview is great. We'll link it in the show notes. And he's like, the iOS app, the app stores are governed by Apple and Google, and it's like they get to determine whether or not you ship a feature. So in some ways, he sees AI. This is the other part of Llama 3, is this like Meta AI, which is in all the apps now, is he sees AI as potentially the next platform, and he's doing everything he can to avoid this. So there's a lot of history in motivating why they're putting so much money into this, and whether or not it's true that it wins by being open. I almost feel like Meta's gonna like bash heads with Hugging Face in this way, because Meta's Llama 3 branding is so high. There's this detail in the license that if I fine tune a model from the open weights, I have to if my Hugging Face name is like Nato Lambert, the model has to be called Llama 3 dash and then my model name. So it literally has to be branded as model Llama 3 before I get to add what I want. So that's like that's so forward into the ecosystem. Everyone's not going to like it, but it will cement Llama 3 as like the name of, it's like the short-term equivalent for what a open language model is. It's a Llama 3. And like they encoded that in their license, and people don't like it, but that just pays off. If I was Hugging Face, I'd be somewhat concerned, because it's cheaper for Meta to build a Hugging Face than it is for them to buy Hugging Face. Like,
yeah,
it's somewhat tongue in cheek, but it's out there, and we've seen this with this model, and this is like that they're willing to put the money in. I think the orders of investment, it's like order of $100 million probably for this model. What's released now, and this 400 billion parameter model is only more. That's putting people to the sword. I think if given how good, so if you look at like Chatbot Arena and these things that people think are valid measurements, I was doing air quotes on video, of model ability, it's close behind the current Anthropic and OpenAI models. And there's another model, it's like so funny with this announcement of another model training, just to like really be like, look, we're coming for you guys. And to have that dynamic, I find it, like I tweeted this random thing today that was like, this is definitely going to be the good old days of AI, at least from entertainment. Like there's obviously problems with AI happening right now. I don't mean to belittle those, but like having four major technology companies going head to head in one space is just nuts. Like we see one versus one often, or like one big versus one small, like Uber versus Lyft. Like, but imagine if there's four Ubers and Lyfts. Like, what the heck? Like, that's nuts.
Yeah, it's actually, the image just popped into my head of, you know, the fact that, so I started off many, 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 many years ago. My original academic specialty was astrophysics, and one of my very first jobs, my freshman year of college, was I was working, this was Northwestern, I was working to help the local observatory model binary star systems or something like this. And I was astonished to learn that like most of the stars in their data set were binaries. In other words, most of the stars, at least they were monitoring, were not alone, that there was one other star, you know, with them in that system. And that's a surprisingly stable equilibrium, you know, in fact, they orbit each other. And that's actually, I mean, if we have any astrophysicists listening, they can correct me about this, but I think that actually in the cosmos, as we are able to observe it, that is more common than just individual stars. And then of course you can compare that, another kind of pop culture reference, to the three body problem and like that kind of stuff.
I'm almost done with the second book. We're quickly going to divert into retort culture corner.
We're going to have some of that on this episode, yeah. But like you get much less stable dynamics when you start to try to add additional bodies. And that's why like most star systems, you maybe get two stars or you get one with many planets, but it doesn't really work to have three stars or more than that. And yeah, you see something similar. Yeah. It is an interesting moment where I've also been. It's common. I mean, when you think about markets, when you think about highly capital intensive industries, often what happens is once the market becomes stable, you have something like a very small number of very large companies at the top who are kind of hegemonic in that space. Think of like the big three auto dealers would be like a good classic example of this kind of a thing. It's not a coincidence that there are three. There's lots of reasons for why markets tend to kind of end up in an equilibrium like that, but it's common. And so what's remarkable with what's happening right now in LLM development is you don't usually get four companies that are simultaneously racing to just get this way. And so that's not, you know, that's not a dozen companies.
It's different that it, like, it looks like this. It also looks like, I mean, I was going to ask you later on, be like, so Tom, did we miss anyone in our language model provider space? And it's like, what the hell happened to Mistral after this? Like, the open weight model is better than the model that they were selling. Like, business model, gone. Like, because their whole proposition.
They leapfrogged.
Whole proposition was that we'll give model weights for you to optimize and run locally, and you don't have to worry about data or anything. So Metal just released better things publicly. And like I think like Mistral knew this was possible. They're really like they're smart, and Arthur, the CEO, is thinking about strategy. So like he knew this was a possibility, but this is the landscape that we're in. And I think that's really honestly probably mostly Meta versus Google in terms of the people that have the advantage to try things just based on the resources they have.
Not even Microsoft. You'd put as like in the game on that.
Yeah. If you count OpenAI as a Microsoft subsidiary, they're probably in the similar game.
Yeah. OpenAI is kind of like the Darth Maul.
It's unpredictable.
Microsoft is Darth Sidious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, quite literally there's just the relationship is weakly bonded, but they want to be that. Like Microsoft wants that weak bond to be a way for them to have high leverage. But I don't think Microsoft is incentivized to train language models in the same way. They're trying to put their toes in every pot. They have deals with OpenAI. They have deals with Meta for Llama models. They have deals with Mistral. They've acquired Inflection. Like they've already like hedged. So I think that culturally it's hard to commit when you have hedged. Like Google seems pretty committed. They did another reorg. This is an interesting tidbit where Google's now previously the people doing safety on models was outside of the core training team in DeepMind, and now the safety people are under the same umbrella, and that is a much more serious setup in my perspective. I mean, at AI2 we talk about safety, and it's like discussion mess after mess of a discussion. You have to define what safety means to you. Then you have to figure out if you can actually do it in a training session. And then you have to figure out if you can actually do it in a generalizing wild session. Like if you let it out into the wild, if users actually find what you wanted. I'm like, it needs to be deeply integrated if that's your priority. So like Google's still shifting. I think the sounds out of Google's camp are positive as well. So it's just like everyone's hunkered down and trying to do this.
So that's all very, interesting to me. It seems like an accurate read of even a very rapidly evolving landscape, technically and also organizationally. There's a lot of churn even now. It's been such a crazy like 18 months. Is that how long it's been since ChatGPT, I think it's like caught up on that. Something
I
like
can
that.
Send you these slides. I gave this lecture on like the history of open alignment, which is essentially I just walked through the story of things that I have seen since ChatGPT happens. It's like all these random model names and techniques that people have heard from. So it has been like, it was December of 2022. So it's been like 16 months, 14 months of which have been very high paced.
Yeah. So in light of that dynamic and in light of the kind of cosmological forces that seem to be involved in how this plays out, what does leadership look like right now, if anything? Like, does it matter? This is a sort of classic sociological question. Like, where is agency here? Like, can Zuckerberg actually do something that isn't already basically baked into the position of whoever is leading Meta? And you know, the same for Sundar and the same for...
I think it's culture. Like, how do you map culture into leadership? I think it is all about signaling. So, like, people, whether or not they want to, they follow the people that they technically report to. So, like, all the people in Gen AI will see that he just wants to build cool stuff and do what is what he thinks is best and make hard decisions. And I think people embody that. Whether or not it could be like a revealed preference rather than a stated preference. Because I think a lot of people working at Meta still have Stockholm syndrome because they're like, oh, I work at this evil company. I don't think that is necessarily the case. I think there's a lot of complex internet dynamics that they got trapped in, and they've done some bad things. I think that's true. But I think people in Gen AI will look up to that. And I think that's inspiring for people. Like, if you were to graduate your PhD and you're like, this guy that has unlimited money is working super hard to ship something that's changing the world, versus like people can, that's a very natural thing. So I think beyond that, it's very little. It's like one-way door decisions is what CEO makes. It's like that in culture. They make the decisions where no one else could make a decision that seemed reasonable, and then they set a tone.
That makes sense.
Does that fit for you? Like, I have to ask myself the same question. Like, what does it mean for me to be a leader within AI too is something that I want to think about. It's like, I can't work on everything.
Well, right. I don't think that's what leadership would mean.
It's very in between the lines, which is like the difference between the Zuckerberg and the Sundar Pichai. Like, Sundar does not present as if he is hustling on this. Like, he might be, but I don't hear about that even from anywhere.
I think there's a lot. Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's another dimension of it too, which is that leadership is often about telling stories, you can
keep going.
Well, it's related to what you were saying in the sense that it is about culture. And I think storytelling comes in to the extent that a leader is someone who finds creative ways to relate different parts of a large organizational culture or constituencies or sentiments that maybe are not obviously coordinated with each other. Maybe there's tension. Maybe there are values that it's not clear which should be given priority at a given moment in time. Maybe many of you're at Meta or whatever. Maybe many of the people who are building these systems are legitimately worried about safety, but maybe many of them are also more worried or give priority to the more open source considerations around this stuff, right?
Yeah, I think easier decision for them. Like, I think that this bigger model that's looming and multimodal models are much harder to make safety arguments about, because like, I think anything that could generate images, I'm pretty scared of touching. So I think that is where like some of this will take another level, because I mean, what is your quick gut check on if you release an open weight model that could generate images, it's likely making it easier for people to generate CSAM, which is like this, I don't know what to do about that. It's a bold stance to be like, yeah, the internet platform should deal with it, not me. I think it's a valid argument, but societally, to me, feels bad to push harm to knowingly redistribute the who is responsible for real harms. To like unknowingly do it, I think is different. But to release something knowing that you're making somebody else have a harder job just feels not good.
Right. So to me, that's an example of a situation where a leader is someone, in this circumstance, who would be able to be decisive, certainly, and define what it is the organization in question.
Well, do you think Meta could do both? Because Meta is one of the organizations that monitors the most. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but like, what if Meta is like, A, we're releasing this bottle, and B, we're rolling out huge improvements across our entire suite of apps and encouraging Google, et cetera, to use these tools we built. That would be a cool demonstration of open source, which is like, here's all the tools for detecting this. We made them. This was the primary risk that we came up with. We're addressing it. They have the money to do that.
They have the money to do it. I mean, they have the ability to do it, right? That's what money means, I guess, in this case. They have the ability to do that. And that's still, maybe this is romantic of me to put it this way. I still feel like, though, it would need to be framed. It would need to be justified. It would need to be motivated. It would need to be given direction rather than just done. And that's, I think, where somebody like a Zuckerberg would be the one who has to be the point of contact, who's saying, this is what our mission statement is. These are our values. This is the kind of internet, or this is the kind of world that we want to create and live in. And then they would speak to whatever the values of that are. And then they would frame that decision as not just reasonable, but motivating, if that makes sense. Something that actually, when you hear it, you're like, you've now convinced me. I'm persuaded. And maybe, as you said, if I'm a finishing PhD or whatever, I would even prefer to work at a company like that because that's an inspiring mission. Inspiration, in this case, like practically speaking, just means it's a kind of power. It's the ability to kind of nudge people towards one course of action rather than another. And the best leaders, I think, are people who find ways to exercise that in a non-toxic way. And stories do that. If you're a good storyteller, that's like a lot.
How much do you think stories induce performance? Like, I'm trying to figure out how much of these models' relative capabilities is like predetermined, or is like Llama 3, like, is this like a top few percent outcome, or is it kind of bound to be with the investment that they put in? Are there specific points that made this happen and didn't in the last 6 months? Like, are there any points where that could have gone to the left turn? I just wish we had more. This is why I wish we had more insight into it.
Well, that's what we're exploring that right now. I think it's clear at this point that sooner or later, if it hadn't have been ChatGPT, somebody or some company would have released an interface that would have caught the internet by storm.
Yeah,
it was ChatGPT, and since then we've been living in this kind of new dynamic. So that's all impersonal. There's no personalities behind what I just said. So the question then is, where does something like charisma enter the picture? Where does something like authority, where does something like legitimacy, where does something like, I keep using the word leadership, but like, that's what we're talking about right now. And I think it's fundamentally, it's emotional. I think it's in many ways psychological. We use this term vibes a lot, which I think is fair. Vibes are sort of like unorganized stories. They're kind of like people just exude a certain bandwidth of energy that you're comfortable with or not, and that's a vibe. But a story is richer than that, because a story has a cadence, it has a structure, there's a narrative there, there are actors, there are roles, and that's very powerful, because then you're able to make people feel things beyond just whatever they happen to see on Twitter.
Yeah, I think the core debate that I want to get to at this point is like, how much of this is actually about stories and how much is it about resources? So I think this is the next thing that I want to talk about. So it's like, the Meta has a ton of GPUs. This generation of models is not that ridiculous, what we have now. I could fine tune these models. I'm at a organization with good compute, but not ridiculous. Academics will struggle. But this 400 billion parameter model, like, I don't even literally have code that I would know how to fine tune this. Like, essentially, there's some, just for quick maths, if you're loading a model to run inference, for every billion parameters in the model, you need about 2 gigabytes of memory. A modern GPU from NVIDIA, an A100, H100, has 80 gigabytes of memory. So to run inference, you would need at least 10 of these GPUs. The GPUs only come in packs of 8 that are linked together. So you need at least 2 nodes just to run inference on this. And what tends to happen is to run any sort of fine tuning. This would not necessarily be fast. You would need like 7 halves more. So essentially it's like a factor of 2 for inference on this multiple and a factor of 7 for fine tuning. So this is like, you would, if you go from 10 to, you would need like 36, like, or maybe 32, probably 40 really GPUs. 48 H100s is more than the entire compute that most academic labs will have. That would be a pretty well off academic lab. So Meta is going to release this model that is on track to be better than GPT-4, better than Claude 3, or like it's probably going to be similar. It's unlikely that it's actually better. And it's well sooner than I expected it, and it is not something that most people can actually use outside of well-funded industry labs. That's kind of like point one, and then point two is the long-term future of like power plants and data centers, which I don't really know how to predict. But there's like this preliminary access problem, and yeah. I wonder if capabilities is just about resources. Like, is this just that Meta is trading an equivalently big model and they're getting equivalently big results? In which case, opening it up, it's probably fine. It's good transparency if it's just about resources. Like, we get that we know the resources that everyone has at play. But, like, I think that that is a strong narrative in Silicon Valley, which is, like, whoever commits the most to having the most resources is going to win. Whoever understands that the resources are the bottleneck is going to win.
I do feel right now, and for the last 18 months, regardless of whatever you may see on a given news cycle or whatever the equivalent of that is on Twitter, maybe it's like 15 minutes or something. This is overwhelmingly a resource story. And the reason I keep returning to this question of like, what does it mean to be a leader right now is because I honestly don't know what the answer to that is, because I do think that overwhelmingly this is just a resource race about whether it's compute, whether it's data.
I feel like the good leadership thing to just tell people to stay the course. As long as you're in the right ballpark. Like, as long as you're right in the ballpark, you have to wait until the next phase. Like, eventually this will cap out and all the dynamics will change. But we don't know when that will be, which makes for such an unreal kind of thing.
It's entirely, yeah, possible that right now what it means to be a good leader is basically just to be a good administrator. Where
Don't cook your books. It's like, don't cook your books. Like, what if Mistral is rumored like to have given away like 48% of their company in their seed round, like one of the most bizarre seed rounds ever in Valley terms. So like, maybe they just cooked their books and now they're going to have a hard time. And like, they fine. But like,
in fairness, we've seen Stable Diffusion has kind of insert sound effect.
Yes.
Going for like the sound effect. There's that sound effect. We can insert it. I'll see if I can do it later. And that sound effect on the Price is Right when somebody like guesses over the price. It's like the. And you know, there's also examples of, you know, there's like the Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, talking about cooking the books. I think like a lot of their receipts or whatever were at best on Slack and at worst just, you know, were non-existent. So yeah, I think that being a good administrator is not trivial. It is challenging. It's challenging to not, it's frankly challenging to not cook the books. It's also just challenging to keep the books, to keep consistent records, especially as you said, when even the biggest companies like Google have rapidly reconsolidated their teams. They kind of amalgamated DeepMind, like all this stuff. There's a lot of metabolism going on, and it's not easy organizationally to achieve that. And so I think in that regard, there's a lot of like back-end leadership that has probably been going on that, you know, we're not privy to, because you'd have to be like really kind of there in order to really witness whether it's going well or not. But I think there's this other dimension of leadership that I keep returning to, which is who and what does it mean to inspire? What does it mean to tell a story? I think the best we've seen of that right now, best I just made, is like the most emblematic example of that is all this still consistent discussion of like AGI, right? The meme that came out with Zuckerberg.
I have a blog on this coming out tomorrow, eviscerating AGI.
I mean, the meme from the release, right, was him saying, like, we're going to open source AGI. Yeah. That was the line that got said everywhere.
I feel like he's appealing. Have you ever listened to any of the All In podcast?
No, I don't.
Those guys are kind of loonies, but they're like four rich investment people. And they're like so hyped up on Zuck juice right now. It's like Zuck is like their perfect CEO. They're like open sourcing stuff, making tons of money. They're like open sourcing AGI, butchering all these like terms and social issues. It's just like, it's entertaining because they're just like kind of in their own world and they're charismatic. But like at the end of the day, they're just off in a different world.
There's an audience for that. I'm frankly not sure how big the audience is, you know, demographically speaking. It's maybe, as you just said, maybe it's speaking. It's a little bigger, but it's literally just like those four people,
it's really popular. It probably appeals to like reasonably well-off young men, which is a large population.
There's that. There's also, I mean, yeah, even a company like, you know, Anthropic has a story per se that differentiates it from OpenAI, big science, you know, and like you see this and you see other sorts of public statements that they make about, you know, how they think about this stuff. And every, I think, company, every startup, every tech company worth its salt, you know, should have a brand.
What do you think Zuck thinks AGI is? So I kind of, in this article that'll be out on this post, is like, I said that the title is AGI is what you want it to be. And essentially, for whatever reason, I think the RL success before language model success captured the idea of AGI being about feedback and like autonomy or agency or something, which is like, there's some notion of, or it's like intelligence improving over time and feedback. I need to look at my draft, but it's like there's something of evolving over time and there's something of the actual policy being able to change over time. For whatever reason, people are obsessed with those two, but if you look at the word artificial general intelligence, it doesn't imply that at all. So people are obsessed with agency. There's even a list of modern AGI definitions by people who are generally ousted from the AI community. And a large percentage of them are about embodiment, which just takes agency even further. And I'm like, why are people obsessed with grounding intelligence with physicality and human likeness? It's like, that is like, I'm like, what? Like, what? Why is like this? I get to dunk on Gary Marcus, which is always fun in that post. But it's like, why is this? Why are these like? I just think like it takes us back like years when you actually try to define what AGI is.
For me, I think a lot of the question. Well, your question was, what does Zuckerberg mean?
What
does
Zuckerberg?
I think that's beyond my pay grade. I mean, you and I can speculate about. You might have a better answer to that than me. I wouldn't purport to say what I think he thinks it is. But I think for me, the way people think about it, the way people appropriate it and make it their own, I do think the jumping off point in a lot of ways like ties back to the fact that you can go and read like the original Dartmouth conference statement on like what is AI and like what does it mean to achieve it, so to speak, or what does it mean to make progress on it. And you can see when you go back to it, like, which of those things we actually have been able to do and which of those things we've not yet been able to do, right? And so I think John McCarthy, who is like one of the people spearheading, you know, that workshop, that conference, then subsequently was still a big important person in like the good old-fashioned variety of AI, I believe himself did write a lot about the role of what he thought embodiment would be important for as distinct from just symbolic reasoning. So there's kind of been this ghost, like in the history of AI, of like, there might be some ways in which, whether it's embodiment or situatedness or lots of other terms, like kind of capture something granular about the corporeality of being like a living organism in the world, looking for nutrients, whatever, that seems important for being intelligent. But that's kind of speculative. And I think a lot of the power of AGI as a term is that I think it kind of separates it and says like, well, no, it's really just the ability to achieve some kind of strategic behavior.
Well, I just think it's like
works.
A moving goalpost. This is the argument of the post. It's like, if it's going to, like, human intelligence is not static. Like, there's this essentially since AlphaGo, Go players have gotten a lot better. And it's like, as ChatGPT becomes 100%. Better and better, the average human employee is going to become better and better. So if OpenAI's definition is strictly defines AGI on needing to replace a large amount of human labor, like
51%.
It's always going to be marginal, because in order to fully replace an employee that has access to ChatGPT, you need to be way better. And that's why it's like that, with the kind of weird discourse about it, the culture of OpenAI, it literally just feels like a forever religion, which I think is fine. It just sucks that the popular narrative is going to go against, it's just going to be bad forever.
That may well be the way that this pans out. I mean, I've been sympathetic for a long time now too. There's a school of thought in like cognitive studies and also like evolutionary psychology a little bit, I guess, that argues that what kind of sets Homo sapiens apart as a species is not necessarily that we're smarter, and certainly not that we're stronger in any kind of individual sense, but that we're defined more by our plasticity than by our robustness. So in other words, as a species, and arguably even as individuals, we have a tremendous, and possibly in the history of evolution, unprecedented capacity to learn, to adapt, and to adapt not on the evolutionary scale, like not on the biological scale, but on the like cognitive scale. So even in the course of one person's life, you can massively reskill yourself to a degree that, I mean, very few other species, if any, can approximate. It's funny, I happen to know this just because I went down a YouTube rabbit hole like not long ago, and I was then went through Wikipedia to learn about it. I read a lot about the capuchin monkey, and capuchins are very smart monkeys, like very smart. I think the Ace Ventura movies, he has like a capuchin as his pet, if you guys are familiar with those movies. But anyway, they're very clever little monkeys, and there have been studies done of capuchins that they are, in fact, they do have an ability to learn that's quite significant. And so they can pass down, apparently, the use and adaptability of tools cross-generationally and even within generations. And I think this study, what ethnographers of capuchins have found, is that if a capuchin watches something be done for like some use of a tool, let's say, even if it has like multiple steps to achieve some outcome, a capuchin takes something like 8 years to observe the behavior, to observe all the different steps, to such a degree that they can eventually be like, okay, that's how I can like do this sequence of actions and make it so that I can break open a coconut, even though a coconut is like as big as my body. Like if I just take all these steps and chisel this and do that, then I can do it. Takes it 8 years. It took me 8 years to get a PhD from when I was at Berkeley. Now, I'm not saying that I'm smarter than a capuchin because getting a PhD is somehow more intelligent or more impressive than breaking open a coconut that's the size of my body. But I am confident that I could readily adapt, and if I was self-hating enough, even get a new PhD now if I wanted to, really, in some completely different field and reestablish myself there, God help me. On, you know, something like
this. We would have an intervention. But yeah, I think this is why the whole AGI thing is weird. I think I would be much happier. Like the whole, and whenever anyone uses AGI to credit their leadership or strategy, and it's just like, oh, it feels bad, man. Like that's my thing. Like some people get upset with the open source definition being wrong. I think that like the whole AGI thing just misappropriates a lot about what AI actually is, which is just like augmenting intelligence that we have. And that's a disservice to people. I think ChatGPT in the history books will be when all of this AI started, and whatever is coming, like, I guess the question is like, is there another inflection point, or is ChatGPT the inflection point? And like, if that's the case, it's going to be what is remembered as the first general intelligence. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know if there will be another point that is like, this is when everything started with AI and we just forget everything that happened. Or will it feel like a continuation from here?
From the standpoint of, so I sort of joined the field of AI, I guess, in 2016. And I told that story already on a previous episode. But like, I was joining it in the wake of like AlexNet. I think even at the time, it was clear to me that like, okay, this was sort of a transformative moment when, so the mythology goes, but this, I think frankly, in some ways it's true, Jeff Hinton had been alone in the wilderness for decades, sort of being like, if
cracking
you make
open
it like
a body sized coconut.
Yeah, he was, Jeff Hinton was the capuchin in the wilderness being like, if we can just make this just like a brain, then it's gonna be better. It's gonna be better. And maybe in the background there was some other like, yeah, Lacuna is like an orangutan who's like watching him play with this or whatever. So like there's like a group of primates that are like, there might be something here. Anyway, 2013, Alex Met happens, and that's a moment. People in the field recognized that was a moment. You had to, because it beat everything else that was on the market. This is probably, looking back on it, I haven't looked at the graph, but I imagine if you look starting in 2013, that's probably when NeurIPS like really started to just go crazy, is like after that year, it just like becomes this like giant curve. I think for me personally, and I think I did tell this story already, the inspiring moment for me was AlphaGo, right? It was the fact that you had this, you know, somewhat contrived setting where one of the world's best Go players was, you know, defeated pretty systematically by this machine. And that was impressive, not just because, oh, that's cool, it's another board game that AI has quote unquote solved, but also because the way in which the algorithms that were responsible were, and this was the term that was used at the time in reporting, were more generalizable. Like, that was the way it was talked about. So I don't know. It's possible that from the public's standpoint, from consumer standpoint, I think ChatGPT is an inflection point, absolutely. But I think for other audiences, it was different. The reason AlphaGo for me was the inflection point was that I was someone who previously had wanted and was curious to join the field, but did not yet feel urgency about the moment. And for whatever reason, for me, that was the moment when I was like, okay, actually, this is like about, it's like impending now.
Yeah, I feel like we were both serious people, and we were in AI because it was interesting and obviously simmering. And then like when ChatGPT happens, it's like, okay, this is obviously the sort of thing we knew that sometime in the next 20 years would happen. I think realistically, post-PhD, it was sooner than I would expect. It's like a career-defining change. It's a career-defining change. And then it's like, well, we will see where this takes us, which is what I have been up to now. I think it's interesting that the open versus closed conversation is already fading. I wonder if it comes back with this 400B model being different, this bigger model.
Is it already closing? I'm not following.
The conversation has been fading. Space. It's been shifting more to be about application use case versus open versus closed, which I think is the right way to look at it. And I think that especially OpenAI might have some daggers. Sam might go on another Middle East tour and convince them that this is worse than Iran's nuclear program and or something.
Sam Altman of Arabia. He's like going over the dunes and he's like.
Because I think I was wondering how long open models would continue to scale. And we jumped to like, I think of scales as like 2x. And jumping from this like 70 to 400 is just such a big change. So it's if the 400 succeeds, they have no reason to stop there. The pace still feels high, so there's still more runway. And for me, that was like, oh wow, there's a lot more investment in this open thing than I was potentially thinking. And for me, that's why I was like, okay, this is time to figure out what that means. Like, I don't know what training a 400 billion parameter model means for me in fine tuning, but there's a long problem of figuring out who the players that can participate in that are and how to properly situate the projects that I'm seeding now so that in 6 months they are directionally closer, with the assumption that Llama 4 is also coming. They've always talked about it with that. So the possibility of outcomes for the area that I've been had just really shifted again, and that I haven't fully settled. I don't have full expectations for what Llama 4 represents now and stuff like this, and what Mistral now does. Is Mistral going to now open all of their models because metas are better? They can't sell something. Like, what are they going to do? Like, all of this will play out in weeks and months, and it will be soon.
Tug at the coattails of the EU, I guess, for protection.
For compute? Oh.
Mommy, daddy. We need JBizOne to compute, s'il vous plaît.
They're not dead. Like, they're very good at what they do. They just have a shift. They have a change. And we're yet to see what the output of their changes.
So this has been a helpful conversation for me, I guess, for helping me grok that it's not entirely clear what it means to be a leader in AI right now, other than just to be a good administrator during a time of rapid structural growth and resource management and extraction. Combined,
that's why Google is so good at it. This is why Google is doing so well. Like, Google's cloud business is doing so well. They've been setting up a supercomputer for decades.
And then in the meantime, we've got, you know, some AGI memes and slight differentiation across these companies.
It would just be so boring if there was no AGI memes. What if they were actually realistic?
Well, I'm not
the AGI memes are the way to dissect their stories. Like, we have OpenAI and Anthropic's fear-mongering, and then Meta with Zuckerberg. Like, the AGI is, like, the thing that makes their stories strong and helps us understand why they're telling their stories.
It crystallizes this.
I think that's a good way. I wish I had written that in my article, and I don't feel like going to change it at this point, but I think that's a good way to view the AGI stuff, which is, like, obviously it's bullshit. They know it's bullshit. But a strong term carries a story.
100%. Good place to stop?
Yeah, I think
so. Any last remarks? Okay.
No, I don't have any more giveaways, but thanks for watching.
Oh, is that a semi? Do I have any giveaways? I give away my non sequiturs and my jokes. That's my main giveaway.
You're very generous.
Okay. See you, everybody.
Bye for now.